Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Corey After Show for Season 1, Episode 6. We've got a lot to discuss, and today we've got Shakir. We've got Mustafa Shakir, who plays Moses, as a special guest, so stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Corey After Show. We've got Lucretia.
Hey guys, I'm Lucretia Lyons. You can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one.
That's right. And I'm Phil Svitek. We're still missing Courtney Henderson, but I believe she will be back just in time for the season finale, which I think we have a special guest already slated for that episode. So something to look forward to. Great episode with Kurt Yeager last episode. If you haven't checked that out, definitely do so. And in the meantime, we're going to get Mustafa on the line in a few. But in the meantime, why don't we start with his character, Moses. This is his character on the show, for those of you who don't know, and obviously a big, big role for him tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, we're finally starting to learn who he is, yeah, which is really interesting because he's kind of been mysterious till now. Yeah.
That's right, yeah. Very mysterious. And obviously we know he's tied in with the broker, and I believe we have him on the line. Yeah. Hello, sir.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good, good. We can kill the music if you want in the background. There we go. Thank you for joining us. I know it's late for you, and you've got work in the morning, but appreciate your time nonetheless.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Absolutely.
So why don't we kind of start with how you sort of got involved in the show and whatnot. You know, tell us what the audition process was like.
Quarry was interesting. I was a self-tape. My daughter and I, we did the audition, sent it in. Didn't think a bunch about it because I was doing it was during pilot season, so it was a lot going on. And then I got a call back, you know, that they liked me, and then the rest is history, pretty much.
How do you prepare for a role like this? Like, what was the sort of brief that you got about your character, and then, you know, as it kind of develops, because obviously it's everyone's roles overall are very dark.
Yeah, preparation. I don't know, man. You just a lot of it has to do with the atmosphere that they set up, you know, the clothes. It all adds to it. The process was more about just feeling what was going on and letting it happen, because he is kind of mysterious and his backstory wasn't super obvious. As you know, Moses was added to the mix. He's not really in the Max Collins novels. Mm-hmm. So his character is, you know, new to even the creators.
Got it. And, you know, one of the things I wanted to, obviously a great episode for you tonight, or technically Friday, but we're talking about it today. I want to talk about the curfew aspect of it, mm-hmm. because one of the things I love about the show is obviously it's historic, but and yet it still plays so true of what's going on today. And that scene, obviously with Marcus and the police, I thought was so powerful. Yeah. You know, and kind of from your perspective, how did you approach that scene, or what did it feel like for you as Mustafa, not necessarily Moses, to film?
I thought it was amazing. It's a great moment for television, just to see that. Because often the imagery is when you see a black man coming up against the police, it's a disempowered image. And so for him to stand up for a young black male at that moment in time on history and, you know, on television, I think it's just powerful overall. I don't necessarily advocate being aggressive with the cops, but it's better that it ended peacefully, you know, even though there was frustration, if that makes any sense, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I know you mentioned your daughter. So as a father yourself, how would you personally react in that situation?
Just like Moses did. Mm-hmm. That's not cool. Yeah. You shouldn't be talking to my kids that way. And I'm going to ask you to keep, you know, get on your way, pretty much, you know?
Is Moses, obviously, with kind of Marcus, like, you know, we're seeing the lines blurred a lot in terms of work, but also, you know, I do think he's, you know, taking a liking to Marcus and almost becoming, you know, a father figure to him. You know, would you say that's the case? And where did that shift start to happen?
Yeah, I mean, right. I mean, he definitely sees himself in Marcus, you know. A part of what I do know about Moses is that he had a rough beginning. You know, he was in the South dealing with much of what Marcus is dealing with, probably a little bit more severely. So he sees himself in Marcus. And, you know, it's like even though he's on a mission, there's a certain level of Stockholm syndrome that exists as well. So he's taken a liking to the entire family. And it would be, you know, hard for him not to empathize with them, you know, even though he's trying to get some money back.
Obviously. And I do want to ask you about Melba, right? Is that her name? Like, what? Mm-hmm. Why was Moses so cold to her? Obviously, he's kind of thinking about these various things, but I felt bad for her that she was getting sent out during curfew to go back home.
Yeah,
it's horrible. I mean, Moses is a complicated character. I think after a long day, man, he just really wanted some peace, you know. And he went about it kind of aggressively. I mean, I think there was a. The way I saw it, there was probably a little bit of guilt for what he had to do with that family, you know, being that they had gone through so much at that particular time. I'd be like, you have to have a bit of a conscience, at some, you know. Mm-hmm. So funny enough, he probably took that out on Melba.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, as you say, with Moses, the backstory is pretty mysterious, and you said that he had a rough time. Do you feel that he is a military man? Do you think that Moses was in Vietnam? Because they haven't really talked about it so much. Yeah.
I don't think so. I think, like, you know, he's a musician, so that's like a bigger play in terms of his backstory. So I don't think that he was necessarily in the military, but not exempt from some of the hardships that were associated with the military, and also just being black in the South at that particular time. I know that he had like some rough beginnings, sort of like a similar to like Malcolm X, like his dad was killed for racial reasons. And so that sort of fueled some of his anger.
Yeah. And as you said, he's a musician, and maybe that's what the broker was playing on with him is, you know, as a musician, you want to do that for the rest of your life. And a lot of times that does take a lot of money. Do you think that that's more of his motivation since he doesn't seem to have too many familial ties?
Actually, the funny thing is, I think he has like a lot of ties that you don't we haven't seen yet. Yeah. You know, he seems like totally the man who has to drop off some money for several families. You know what I mean? To keep them going, which is his name, Moses, which comes from. It's like he's the go-between for the broker and the black community, which is where you get that name from. But music definitely is a huge part of it for him. And as you can see, it was also some frustrations, you know, like he's trying to get it going, but it's just not working out. And so that is part of the reason why he has to deal with the program to make some money and make ends meet. But ultimately, if it was the perfect world, I think Moses would just like take his bass and travel the world and play.
Wow. I think not too unsimilar from Mac either. But speaking, what's his viewpoint or stance on Mac? Because some of the remarks that Mac made in the diner, quite off-putting to say the least.
Yeah, I don't think he likes him so much. You know, I mean, and you know, Mac is a hard character to like. You know, he's always brooding. You know, he's very self-involved. So at this particular point, I don't think he loves him all that much.
We have a sweet message from Joshua Williams III, who plays Marcus. He wants to tell you hi. Yeah.
Hey, man. Yeah, that's my homeboy. He is in it.
Let me ask you this. It's one of the things that Lucretia and I speculated last episode of how Marcus would kind of develop in the sense that, you know, because this happened, does he all of a sudden start to kind of form an opinion that all white people are just evil? And especially now that Moses sort of is more in his life, that, you know, we had that great moment between Marcus and Mac. But, you know, I'm not quite sure. I think Moses might be winning.
And the thing is, I think there's an awareness of what's going on, but I don't think Moses hates anybody. He's sort of like a maverick, and he understands like both sides of the law, which is why he's able to get along with it. I mean, you know what I'm saying, relatively speaking. I don't know. I don't know if it definitely feels like he's leaning toward that. You know, he sees a lot of struggle, but it's hard to tell. Hard to tell, you know, if that answers your question.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, again, it's one of the reasons why I love sort of talking about the show is because, you know, the lines are so blurred and all we're left with is always speculation and interpreting kind of what things mean. And so it's obviously a very powerful thing, especially, yeah. as Moses says to him, like, you know, when did you see Martin Luther King die? And he says, age 9. So you're old enough to understand. I mean, that's definitely powerful. 9 years old to understand what the world is really like.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge.
I really liked how we had the contrast of Mac talking with Marcus and talking about Martin Luther King and sort of helping him understand why his dad was shot and comparing it to that. That was really sweet. But there's only a level that Mac can understand, because as a Vietnam vet, he has been discriminated against to an extent. But it's nothing like being a black man at that time. How did you feel about showing the comparing and contrasting while he's trying to understand?
How I felt about it? Well, I mean, it's real. It's like one of those things. It's like you can't sugarcoat it, you know? It is what it is. And I think it probably would be easier for him to swallow because, you know, I am a black man, you know what I mean, telling him about this. But, yeah, man, like it is what it is. You know, it's a hard reality to swallow, but nonetheless one that, you know, you have to. Unfortunately, at 9 years old.
And what, you know, I know you can't give us specifics, but what can we look forward to with Moses in the last two episodes?
You know, he's a good agent. You know, he gets what he needs done. He's a complex dude. You know, that's the thing. I think you get to see just how much goes into doing what he does, like how things have to get turned off and on inside of the consciousness or in the psyche in order to achieve the ends, and how at the end of the day it really is just business.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know we've got to wrap you up in a few, but what are some other projects you've got coming out that you can tease for fans of yours?
I got some cool stuff. I did a guest star spot on Timeless. It's going to be on MC in November 14th. Look out for that. It's pretty cool. I play a Black Panther, funny enough. I got Double Play. It's coming. We get to see the premiere at the end of January, with Ernest Dickerson. It's a really cool movie that we shot in Curacao. I'm excited to see how that turned out, because I get to actually act. Like, I have to do an accent and I'm in a foreign locale. It's really, like, cool. And I'm just wrapping up The Deuce right now with James Franco and Maggie Gyllenhaal. I saw one of those cuts, episode 4, and I'm pretty excited about it. It's cool. It's a really cool piece.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And where can people follow you for all the updates to make sure that they can catch all these?
Twitter. Twitter's good. Facebook. I do. Mustafa Effortless is on Instagram and Effortless One on Twitter. Effortless One is Effortless O-N-E.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And any last questions from you, Lucretia, or the chat?
Actually, I don't think so.
All right.
Looks pretty good in here. Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us. We understand that it's late for you, but again, really appreciate it, as I'm sure the fans do too. And they'll probably let us know in the comment section as well. So, at any time, in the future, once all these other projects hit, you know, come on back, especially we have our sister network, Popcorn Talk Network. So when the movie comes out, we'd love to have you for that and talk there as well.
Cool, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you guys. Hopefully I was coherent enough at this hour.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, you gave some good stuff. We appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. Cheers.
Thank you.
So there you have it. Yeah. Very fun guy. It's always great to get to know these guys, especially when their characters are so dark, and just to know, no, they're regular people.
I know, like, Kurt Yeager's like, I play bad guys all the time, but I'm nice, right? It's funny.
There seems to be a pattern. The worse you are on TV, the more nicer you probably are in real life.
Yeah.
Let's go with that. I think for the most part, we covered everything with Moses, unless there's any last-minute additions that you have.
I think that was it.
Yeah. All right. I can never read my writing. We have a rundown here, and I can never read my writing. So, Lucretia, what's the next
you
thing?
You have Joni selling the house.
Okay,
and
Joni selling the house. Yeah. All right, so let's talk about that. Going behind, obviously, Max back, rightfully scared after this guy has an episode of PTSD where he's just basically gunning down the neighborhood naked and doesn't remember any of it. So is she right to kind of try to sell this house?
Well, and especially being that she's more so trying to, like, take care of business as far as, like, selling the house, getting out of there, trying to get him out of it, trying to, you know, have money. There was a lot of factors in it that Joni's just being practical at this point. As I say, I just go back and forth on her. I'm like, okay, this episode, you're practical, you love him, but you're a little scared because he is cray-cray, but,
You know, I can actually applaud her for today's efforts. You know, I think, you know, she's being realistic. Like, this house is probably way too big.
Yeah.
Also, it's not a bad idea to get out of the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Because everyone knows you live there and whatnot. So, you know, and obviously, you know, one of the other things that she comes out of it, she does indeed know that he can't get the money from his father. And that, he, you know, she may not know that he's tried multiple times and whatnot, but I think at least, like, that's put to rest for her.
Yeah, I feel it, she thinks this is the only option other than him continuing to be a murderer for hire.
Yes, which, again, I have to give her credit for, like, you know, because there's been times, like, you talked about Skyler from Breaking Bad would totally be in on it, and at least, like, she's still sane enough to be like, okay, no, like, I understand the position you're in. However, there are options to get out of it.
Yeah, it's that very practical wife, like, I'm with you, but we need to think about this big picture, and since I'm the sane one here, let's look at it.
In the right way.
Exactly.
So that's Joni. What else is on my list? Olsen. Okay, so I like how we're progressing this forward, and I knew it would be a bad thing when Cliff's sister basically said yes to him and they just started hanging out, because the fact that, you know, he's with her is just a big bonus for him, but he's getting he's getting the answers that he needs very easily.
Yeah, great intel, and he's not even really having to work too hard for it, and he's getting all the benefits. This guy's, like, literally sitting pretty.
And I did like the assessment of him is that he can't be satisfied with an easy solution whatsoever. Which also goes, by the way, like, it just kind of makes it scary in terms of how detectives really think. Because it's like, well, it's got a solution. It may not be a great solution, but whatever. It's case closed. Who cares? Just get over it. I don't like that mentality.
Yeah, it is unfortunate, especially when the TV portrays, like, cops and detectives, that they're pretty much just looking to get it done. Like, whether it's Law and Order or Bones or just anything, you're like, that's sort of the mentality. And I just love Josh Randall from Scrubs, you know, a happier role he had. But yeah, this is really interesting to see him kind of be a scumbag. Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, big tip off with, you know, speaking of Kurt Yeager, right? Suggs.
Yeah.
We discover Suggs, and I love the whole, you know, I love the realistic dialogue of which leg? The left leg, or whatever they said. And it was like, wait, is that the one that's cut off, or is that the one that's cut off? Okay, yeah, we got a match.
I love that, like, they're really thinking that there could be another guy with just one leg matching this description, that was so common back then. That's what I thought was funny. It was just, and they were talking about which leg? Oh, yeah, like, that's the guy.
Well, you know what? Yeah. I mean, it probably was. And think about, like, how... Remember, the distance between the two towns was huge. I forget the number of miles exactly, but they drove 4 hours.
4 hours, yeah.
Which, I get it. The cars were a little bit slower back then, but, you know, still quite a distance. You know, so obviously that's... And now the biggest thing was... I want to hear these songs, by the way. I want Moses to play the songs written by Cliff about Joni.
Yeah, that would be fun. Because, yeah, it's like, oh, he wrote a lot of songs about her. It's like, a lot? Like, it's like, that's interesting. It's like, how well did they know each other? I'm kind of finding out about this. Because, yes, he kept that tape at work of them having sex. That's a little weird. But to write all these songs about her?
Oh. Here's the thing. It's one thing to write a song about someone, but it's like, I don't know, just let's say, like, you know, the song would be, "She Brightens My Day." Like, that could be about anything. Like, this, what is this? What's that song where you say the person's name? Joni.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying, right? Like, he explicitly used her name in songs rather than just being like, she lights up my day.
Yeah, that's very specific. It was like, this dude, he was like John Cusack of the 70s. Yeah. Creepy standing out her window, probably.
I would love if he used her full name.
Yes.
Like, not even just Joni, just her entire full name, Joni Conway.
Yeah, because, I mean, that almost seems like it. He did, because his sister knows all about it. And it's like, you know, not Joni from work, but Joni Conway, who's married and had a husband in Vietnam. I mean, he probably just went into detail because he had so many songs. Yeah.
I really want to know what these songs are. Joni, I'm so glad you're cheating with me. Like, please, like, write fan fiction in the comments. Like, what these songs are.
Yes, we'll read them. I'll sing them. It won't be good, but yeah.
I'll bring a little. Bring a little guitar.
Yeah.
It'll be the world's worst band. We'll be like Moses.
Yeah.
But besides that, nothing more there.
Yeah.
Just slowly progressing. This is the slowest burn I've ever seen, but I like it.
I mean, it is only 8 episodes, so it's not, you know, say like a 22 episode show where they're just literally building bits. We know it's coming to an end, but yeah.
Well, the question is it going to be an explosive end, or is this going to be like, oh, okay. It makes sense, but it's not. All right. What was my next thing?
On Buddy.
There? Buddy.
My favorite part.
Which part? Yeah. The boyfriend part or the bingo part?
I love all it because Buddy is just such a fun character. I'm like, I like this guy. He's so entertaining. And he's sort of like the bright spot to a show that can be pretty well depressing and, you know, full of crazy people. But he has this great relationship with his mom who seems to kind of know what he does for a living and everything's great. And then you have, you know, unfortunately, his romantic situation wasn't as great, but he kicked that guy's ass. He showed him how he felt.
Yeah, you know, he's not the stereotypical gay guy.
Yeah, he's a badass. Yeah,
he has no problem with it. Yeah. You know, I mean, is he plotting his end game, though? Like, you know, obviously he wants to get out of this. But in some sense, we've seen him be crazy overall. And I think, like, is he just going to come to an end with this? Like, there's no easy way out for him, is there?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much, you know, like The Godfather. Once they are out, they pull you back in. And I feel that, you know, this is a situation just like with Mac, and he sees it, you know, and Arthur before him. You're not getting out of this. It's going to end badly. Whether you die or you just literally have to go away and see no one you know forever. That's pretty much your only options when it comes to contract killing, the mob, anything under that RICO statute.
That, and it's also going to haunt him. You know, I mean, obviously right now for Mac, Vietnam's the thing that's haunting him. But eventually, like, if that, let's say, were to quiet down, I'm sure the killings that he's doing right now are going to haunt him. And so for Buddy, even if he finds peace somewhere, the guilt in his mind is going to be too much.
Yeah, because Buddy is this, you know, a very open and feeling person as opposed to Mac, who's more closed off. So to me, the fact that Buddy was even doing this was interesting to me because he doesn't fit the personality type. And, you know, he does seem to care about people and want, you know, good things, but he's sort of in this position. So obviously it haunts him. And yeah, like even if he were to leave, it would still always be a part no matter how much, you know, much he drinks or drugs, it never goes away.
Well, what I like, you know, especially about this episode, the fact that we see all these, let's say, morally corrupt people, including Mac, and yet, because of how slow the burn has been, you do start to side with all of them a little bit more. And, you know, the weird line that the brokers always said, like, we're making the world a better place, in some way, I'm like, I guess you kind of are.
Yeah, because he only kills bad people. It's sort of like the Dexter mentality of, you know, all these people that he's giving them to kill essentially had committed heinous crimes, or as opposed to Cliff for Mac, he just slept with his wife. But as far as we know, that's all we've seen as someone who wasn't like, you know, a child molester or a serial killer or, you know, just a crappy human being. He just was, you know, adulterer. That's not that bad, but it was really the only one we can see.
Well, you know, what kind of elevates it tonight is obviously Eugene, right? Because it clicks with Mac, obviously a lot more. Mm-hmm. But even the whole notion of introducing kind of history within the context of this fake world, right? We talked about the Munich Olympics, and now kind of what's going on in Memphis, and you know, they're talking about what. Who was the president then? Why am I blanking on this?
72, wasn't it? Nixon Watergate. Or Ford? Yeah, Nixon. Yeah.
Watergate. I was like, it's Nixon or Ford. Yeah. You know, so we're getting this context, and I like how it sort of seeps into this fake world. And so with Eugene, you know, that's – there's not a question of, is he an evil guy?
Yeah.
You know, this is the second episode that we've seen sort of the ramifications of all of this. And he is a terrible, terrible human being.
Yeah.
And so we're starting to root for these guys and like, yeah, go kill Eugene.
Well, I mean, there were how many seasons of Dexter where the main protagonist is a serial killer killing crappy people? So, I mean, as an American audience, we love that, you know, to root for the bad guy in a way. Or like Walter White, as we discussed earlier. It's like, because they're sort of ridding the world of crappy people and not quite a moral way, but at the same time, it's like, would you go back in time and kill baby Hitler? That's always the question. Yeah.
Yeah, and in some weird way too, you know, America's always been fascinated with Westerns, and I think obviously this is not quite a Western, but the whole mentality of you got to take the law in your own hands and protect your own. I think, especially the fact that everyone sort of has a nickname, the broker, Corey, yeah. Moses, and I do think in some ways, it is like a Western.
Yeah, which I love Westerns, especially when they're space Westerns. But yeah, it's like I do love the 70s too. So coming into this sort of, you know, setting is great as well. And because, you know, I wasn't alive at this time, and neither were you. So, but I talked to people who were sort of asking them questions about, so this is accurate, right? Yeah. Hmm. It's always cool to hear that.
Absolutely. And so, you know, I love... That the broker meets him at Tommy Lee Park, and we're kind of explained the symbolism of all of it, and you know, it's not lost on Maggie. He's like, yeah. I know what you're doing, but still, great sentiment nonetheless. which, by the way, it just goes to show the power of the broker, the fact that he calls him while he's at the record store. Right there.
Yeah, he's just standing there. Oh, I'm Mac. I love that. Just the record store clerk. It's like, I don't know if you've ever been to Dallas, but that's just so good records. Or just any old record store, if you've ever been to it, because I'm sure every town has their own. But it was just so nostalgic seeing that. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I loved it. And you can even see the shock on Mac's face of like, that's me.
Yeah.
But in the end, couldn't be more happier to take on this assignment. As he says, like, I had to make a move on this. Okay. Well, you did.
Yeah, that's cool. And Joshua Williams III, Marcus again, wants to ask us a question. Do you all think that Marcus' relationship will be opened up with Mac and Moses from what you've seen? Yeah.
Will be opened up? Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I think the two of them... It's going to be interesting because, again, I do think there's Moses and there's Mac, and which one is he going to go with? And I liked seeing those two things develop because last episode, Mac was torn by the fact that he let this happen. And so this is his unspoken revenge to Marcus of just getting rid of this guy and also all the while prevented because the fact that he was going to leave a bomb on the bus,
yeah,
he prevented something obviously significant.
Yeah, and I mean, that's so dark. This person already beat the hell out of a kid, and then now he's going to blow them up just because of the color of their skin. And it is hard for Mac to relate, being that he is white, but at the same time, I liked his perspective on, you know, that could have been Marcus. I've got to stop this, because he is trying to care for the son because, you know, his father is dead, who was his best friend, so he's trying to build this fatherly relationship. But at the same time, you have Moses trying to do the same thing because he's sort of getting to know this family, and, you know, as a Black man, he can certainly relate more to this child.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and so it'll be kind of interesting. And obviously, it's one of those things that, you know, Mac can never tell. But I just yeah. wish, in some sense, because think of how happy Marcus would be in the most sick and twisted yeah. ways to know that Mac is the one that did this to Eugene.
I know. It's like, I would want to be like, yeah, that was me. I did that. You're proud of me, buddy.
But definitely not in this situation. Yeah. you know, obviously this is, well, first off, it's not Max MO.
Yeah.
He's not even going to go home and tell Joni, let alone Marcus.
Yeah, she'll probably figure it out when she sees, but yeah, I don't see either one of them saying anything to Marcus unless, you know, he needs to know. Yeah.
And right now, I can't imagine a scenario where he would actually need to know. Absolutely. But there's the watchful eye. What was her name? It's the same girl from the motel, correct?
Yeah, I think they call her Mary Kay because she looks like a Mary Kay lady.
I was going to call her Mary Jane, but yes. Yeah, and she's right there. And so obviously, you know, do you think this is the broker's kind of keeping tabs on him, or is it just her own volition?
There's a part of me that does feel that she is one of the broker's people and possibly keeping tabs on him. But at the same time, it's just, you know, if they're all sort of his kids and they can be that jealous streak of this is his new guy that he's hanging out with. I want to know what this guy's up with. So I sort of see both things could be possible with her. Yeah.
Yeah, and what was interesting, the fact that she was holding the gun, not quite like what I would call the ready position, but about to be ready, let's just say.
Yeah, she had her hand in the holster, as they would say where I'm from.
So what was the intent, if he didn't carry it out, or if for some reason he messed it up, we got to kill Eugene at all costs?
Yeah, I think that's the thing, is she was ready to clean up his mess like she had before.
Okay. Well, luckily he cleaned up things like nobody's business.
Yeah, that was so awesome just to like hit it in the right spot and the gas tank just explode. And then there was already him planting the bomb, so it was even more of an explosion, yeah.
That and also like the way there was joy on his face. And then I don't know if he expected that was a big explosion. Yeah. I don't know how big he expected it to be, but that was huge. And then he's just the slow-mo of him getting blown away. But that was a very cool shot.
Yeah, he should have definitely stepped back a few steps. Maybe he'd have been fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to judge. Yeah.
Is he long? He's not a sniper type of guy, is he?
No, I don't see him.
He's close range.
Yeah, because, I mean, we don't ever see him with a sniper gun. And as a rule, people who've been snipers or Army Rangers, they typically do carry the same weaponry, you know, throughout their life and have a little bit more marksmanship. He's pretty good with the gun, but, yeah, more of a close range shooter.
He had no problem with his fist tonight.
Yeah.
He just got in there, and that was that. But the scene that we definitely have to talk about is the broker at the end. He gets the call, and he says the client. And then you're kind of left wondering, well, is the client there or is it not? Because it's that tight shot, right? And they play it so well. And then finally they reveal it to us with the wider shot that there, in fact, is no client. It's just him and the booze. So what does that mean? What in the world does that mean, Lucretia?
I know. I was sort of like, do what now with this? It's like, where is he going with this? You're just sitting there with the booze. And that, if I were Mac, that's exactly what I would be doing myself too after that. It's like, gotta take a load off. But maybe that's exactly what it was, is taking a load off, and he was just using this as an excuse. Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, I guess the real question is, like, did the broker just make up this assignment? Just because, and he be, you know, I mean, in some sense, if this is just the broker doing it because he really felt that this person was a bad person, then kudos to the broker.
Yeah.
You know, because obviously, I don't know, maybe there is a client, but based on what happened, there is no client.
Yeah.
So, it's just the broker gets more and more mysterious every single episode.
Yeah, and I really like how he's become sort of a funny guy and seems to really enjoy himself. I know that sounds terrible, but it is almost entertaining to see him, you know, really enjoy his little puppetry. And I feel like he gives Mac people that he knows Mac will want to kill, whether it be like the adulterer Cliff, who slept with his wife, ruined his, you know, perfect idea of her, or Suggs, and now Eugene. It's like, yeah, all these people he's definitely okay with killing. And, you know, where does that end, though? Because you're going to run out of people Mac doesn't like.
Well, I think, you know, the broker's going to, you know, he's being the puppeteer that he is. He's going to figure out a way to manipulate him to make him dislike these people. I don't know. I think, I doubt, I mean, the sad part is I don't think we'll ever find out the truth about the broker, to be honest. Like, even if this went on for 50 seasons, I still don't think we'd find out who the Broker is.
He's much like the Joker. We don't know his backstory, but it's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We can only speculate. I do want to hear from you at home, your thoughts on the Broker, because I think that's, you know, there's obviously a mystery to Moses, there's a mystery to Mac, but the Broker himself is the most mysterious person I've ever met on this show. So I'm very curious. Any stray observations about this episode?
To me, it just keeps getting better. Like, the more we peel back the onion, the more of these layers we uncover about all these characters. Like I say, we got back to Buddy and learning more about him and how he wants out. And just, it's interesting to start to find out, you know, maybe with Moses and with Buddy, we're going to figure out how they got to that point. Because, you know, we don't think they're military men as opposed to Mac and Arthur were. So that's what I'm really curious to see.
I think this show is very torturous because this would be a perfect binge show.
Yeah.
And the fact that we're doing it on an episode-by-episode basis is one of the most torturous things I've ever been through in a while. But I mean that sincerely and in the best of intentions. So we've got, like, two more episodes. So why don't we head into predictions for the last two?
Yeah.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
What are we predicting?
I feel that definitely in this next episode, we may find out about, you know, Buddy and Moses' backstory with the Broker, just because they seem to touch a little bit into their characters more in this one. So I feel that, you know, maybe we'll take a little bit outside of Mac because we know so much about him already and get to know them since, you know, the series is wrapping up for the season.
Yeah. Yeah. And we still ultimately have, I don't think we've answered the flashback yet.
Yeah.
Remember, we open up that season, and that's why I hate those types of things, especially when I'm watching on a per-episode basis. Like, I don't need to start there, because then by the time we get the episode, when it actually happens, I'll have no recollection of that little moment.
Yeah, it's like, wasn't it season two of Breaking Bad, where that's how it starts out, and you're like, that's what that was? Like, sometimes you're almost angry by the end, because you're like, okay, I had come up with all these ideas, and that was it, you know?
Yeah. Well, at least Breaking Bad used to keep going to it every single episode. At least this was just kind of it was thrown in there, and then we, you know, we're gonna get to it eventually. So we'll see. I don't think Joni's gonna sell the house, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't see them leaving Memphis, you know, and selling the house. You know, it takes a while, especially, you know, back in those days when they didn't have the internet and things to sell a house. Yeah,
especially if there's not, you know, I mean, honestly, like. The putting a sign in front, like, you know, for sale at that time is probably the biggest advertisement you could have given it.
Yeah. In fact,
like, with a word of mouth thing, not going to work.
Yeah, you might get an ad in a paper. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's...
That costs money, and they don't have money. That's why they're selling the house. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, and we'll see. I'm curious to see what the next assignment for Mac becomes. And this the money. Eventually, someone's going to go find this money. It's got to be somewhere.
Yeah, I think it'll be Marcus, who either knows where the money is or finds it.
Yeah. Yeah, and we've speculated on that before. Mm-hmm. But I'm in agreement. I think Arthur told him the contingency plan of, like, hey, if something were to happen to me, do this.
Yeah, you got to be the man of the house, yeah.
And I think, you know, we'll see kind of, but maybe there's something more to Marcus that, you know, he's testing Moses. Maybe he's testing Mac. And ultimately, you know, whoever sort of wins there, he'll sort of reveal his knowledge.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. Could be completely made up and not actually ever happen. But that's what I got.
Cool. Yeah.
Well, thank you guys for joining us yet again. We always appreciate it. Let us know your guys' comments. Again, thank you to Mustafa Shakir. Last week we had Kurt Yeager. And hopefully for the last two episodes... we have two more guests. Oh. At the very least, one is, as of now, confirmed. But again, things change, so won't reveal just yet who it is and when. In the meantime, where can people follow you and kind of interact with you, Lucretia?
Since I'm Lucretia Lyon, you guys can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one. And thanks so much, Joshua Williams III, who plays Marcus, for chatting with us today. Yeah,
Marcus, feel free to call in next episode. That's what we're gonna do. If you're free next weekend, call in. We'll dial you in.
Yeah, we'll Skype with you too. Yeah.
You do You do Young and the Restless here, among other shows. Ash vs. Evil Dead. Yeah. And what's the Popcorn Talk show? It's a horror movie type show.
Oh, yeah. For the month of October, we do Monster Movie Mashup. So Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, we're on Popcorn Talk. This week, we're discussing Dracula versus Frankenstein. So there's a lot to talk about.
So if you're interested in that, Lucretia runs the gamut of shows.
Literally everything.
And by the way, if you're a fan of Showtime Shameless, definitely check that out. I do the after show, so it's ramping up too. So lots of great TV here at AfterBuzz TV. We try to talk about as many of the great shows as we can. But until then, bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.